listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis, and today we're off to Vernon. The small industrial city in southeast LA County is 5.2 square miles of mostly warehouses and factories. Recently, it's been attracting crowds, including an Oscar-nominated actor.
After picking up his latest Best Actor award for Joker at the SAG Awards on Sunday, Joaquin Phoenix skipped the after party and headed to a pig vigil, a gathering of
activists who come dozens of them. You see, Vernon is home to a Farmer John's slaughterhouse, where pigs are trucked in regularly to be processed into meat. And that's attracted animal rights activists, including the famously vegan Joaquin Phoenix. They hold vigils for the doomed animals, trying to brighten the lives of these pigs, even if it's just right before they depart this mortal coil.
A vigil is not a protest. It's actually just to see the pigs, to bear witness to the pigs. And bearing witness means to actually come up as close as you can to another being that is suffering. So you don't turn away from them suffering, and you come as close as you can, and you try to offer them any comfort that you can. In this case, we're able to come up and we're able to give them water. Oftentimes, they're on the road without water for days. And so we give them water. We may touch them on the snout if they're welcoming to that, and we gauge what they need.
That's Ellen Dent, who's co-founder of the Animal Alliance Network. Dent is with a group of activists who are part of the SAVE movement, a worldwide network that holds these vigils. The Animal Alliance Network's been doing this weekly for a couple of years now. KCRW's Angel Carreras joined them to bear witness to these pigs.
Every Wednesday night, about 100 activists line the usually dormant street of Vernon Avenue. Some carry protest signs, others set up electric candles and a projector. It beams images of pigs being roughed up in slaughterhouses onto a blank wall. There's a lot of humanity on display. Every race, color, creed, punk rockers, the usual activist types. And tonight, vegan teen influencer Genesis Butler.
Well, I figured out about climate change after I went vegan. So I just became a climate change activist, and I'm an environmentalist. So I just tell people about veganism because I think environmentalism and veganism is connected because it's the same thing, because we're fighting for the planet. And when you're vegan, you're helping save the planet. So I think it's just all connected.
But there's also someone here for the first time. She's kind of off by herself. She seems a little antsy.
I'm nervous in a way just because I've only seen pictures.
That's Ailea Thomas, an art educator in LA. She's been vegan for over a decade, but this is the first time she's made it out to one of these vigils.
It's 2020. I feel like there's no need to make excuses. It's not about saying, oh, there's a ton of other people there. I don't need to be there. So it's making a stronger commitment to my veganism.
Thomas and the other activists wait for a truck full of pigs to roll through. The street is illuminated by the red and blue lights of a Vernon police cruiser. Someone starts drumming in anticipation. And then a truck arrives. It stops in the middle of the street. The smell, already god-awful due to being next to a slaughterhouse, is made worse when the new pigs arrive. Their excrement, urine, even blood. It's all in the air. Pungent. Unavoidable.
I knew what to expect, but to see it on video or on social media versus being here, smelling, like all senses on deck, different vibe.
You can see the pigs through a grate in the back of the truck. They're alarmed, confused, and big. They're about 250 pounds.
So you think you're looking at an adult pig, but you're not. You're looking at a 4 to 6 month old pig that has not seen the light of day until it got on that truck, and they're completely bewildered. They have no idea what's going on. They have not been outside of that warehouse, and that warehouse never had any windows. They never saw any light, and they're shuffled onto these trucks by the hundreds, and they're brought here. And this is their final stop. The next place you're gonna see them is in the grocery aisle in a bacon package.
The truck driver's been told to allow the vigil for 2 minutes. The activists give the pigs water with bottles or handheld pumps in this time. Some pet them on their snouts. Thomas is doing a bit of both. She's shaking.
Their expressions are very human-like, and they're very like, they're scared, you can feel it. They're all huddling together, just like trying to comfort each other, it looks like.
please.
2 minutes is up.
That just really sucks.
The truck driver signals to the activists and fades into the slaughterhouse. Smithfield Foods, the owner of the Farmer John's slaughterhouse, is cool with all this. They say the demonstrations don't impact Farmer John's production process or their ability to serve customers. But that doesn't mean everyone likes the activists.
I've been out here when there is not a police presence, and the drivers have tried to run us over. They've flipped us off. They've called us names. A lot of them don't know what's going on. It'll be their first time. And we have to explain to them that we're not against you. Like, we don't want to fight with you. We're not trying to get ran over by your truck. We're just trying to increase awareness. We're not trying to take away their job. We just want them to transport something that's not alive.
Their tone is solemn compassion, not the shock and horror some animal rights activists have been known for. No dousing fake blood on someone or themselves.
We're not here to fight with anybody. You know, we're not here to storm into their slaughterhouse. We're just here to raise awareness, because we're hoping that if we raise enough awareness with enough people, that this will stop.
Maybe it's working, at least with consumers. Smithfield Foods is the world's largest pork processor, and therefore largest pig slaughterer, but recently has started getting in on the plant-based food biz. Late last year, they debuted burger patties, meatballs, and non-dairy Parmesan cheese, all without animal products. The activists hope one day that this slaughterhouse will only produce plant-based protein instead of killing pigs. Until then, they'll be at Vernon Avenue comforting pigs every Wednesday. For KCRW, I'm Angel Carreras.
Coming up, the man who plays the mayor of L.A. on the small screen talks about the role and the city. It's Greater L.A. on KCRW.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Earn your graduate degree in a flexible online format from University of Southern California and learn from faculty at the top of their fields in areas such as business, health, law, engineering, psychology, communications, and more. Explore your options today at online.usc.edu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. And now, a message from the mayor of Los Angeles.
Dear fellow Angelinos, this week, Abigail Thomas took office as the first woman to be named chief of police in the history of our city.
Wait a second. That's not the mayor of L.A. The man you just heard from is fictional, actually, a character in a TV show which centers on another character that the fictional mayor chose to be the city's top cop, played by Edie Falco.
A federal judge made me hire a woman. That's known to everyone, right?
Police union asked if you could say it.
There are no apples in Los Angeles. It never gets cold enough.
Let's reiterate, Thomas Sadowski is not the mayor of L.A., but he plays one on TV in a new drama on CBS called Tommy, and he's here with us right this very moment. My friend, hello.
Hi, Steve.
I want to call you Tommy, by the way.
I know.
But the name of the show is Tommy, which I guess is a coincidence and, most importantly, kind of confusing, right?
Entirely a coincidence and made for an absolute disaster on set because whenever they would say, could you mark Tommy? You know, or can you move Tommy a little bit to the left? Like both Edie and I would shuffle to the left or somebody would come over and put down two marks in places. It was just, It was really problematic.
Nobody's saying like, Tommy, can you hear me? No.
You know, people have tried, Steve. People have tried. They try once.
And that was it.
And that's pretty much that's about pretty much it.
You put an end to that really fast, right? Let's talk about this show called Tommy. The central character is Edie Falco, who plays Abigail Thomas, i.e. Tommy, who becomes L.A. police chief. What's this about?
I mean, honestly, what isn't it about? The sort of great joy of working on this show is that Paul Atanasio, who is our show creator, really just dove in on what is going on, not only in this city, but for us culturally right now, without sort of leaning too hard on any one specific person or persons. And so you have this character who is a former NYPD who has made her way to Los Angeles and, you know, one of very few candidates who is actually qualified for the job to become police chief of the city of Los Angeles.
And spoiler alert, by the way, there was a scandal that preceded this whole
announcement,
that, right?
That comes out within the first, I don't know, minute or so of, of the show. So you're not going to get too much ruined by that. But a scandal precipitates her coming into office. And, you know, the story then takes off about how does this person... not who is, you know, not only the first female chief of police in the city of Los Angeles, first female chief of police in a city, a major metropolitan area in the United States, but also a single mother, navigate the sort of ins and outs of policing a city. And, you know, we sort of think of the show in terms of, you know, kind of a West Wing meets Law and Order sort of thing. You know, there's a lot of... you know, the palace intrigue it's less about the crimes that are being committed day to day and more about what it actually takes to run a city, to keep a city safe. And, you know, through that lens, we look at who we are as a society right now.
How do you prepare to play the mayor of Los Angeles? I mean, is there something that you do? Do you dig into the,
I have a great respect for Mayor Garcetti. I took a look at a number of press conferences and, you know, his sort of...
Did you talk to him?
Addresses. I wish. No, really? I actually didn't get an opportunity to. Yeah.
No advice from the mayor?
No, you know, because I'm not playing Garcetti.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that with absolute respect. I don't have the first clue about what it takes to run a city this size. I don't have the first clue about what it takes to run my car. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I can't even begin to think of, like, putting together, you know, all the stuff that guy has to handle on a daily basis.
But you live in LA, right? I mean, you live here, you understand, you know the machinations, right, of what happens in this city on a day-to-day basis.
I mean, to a certain extent, as much, I guess, as any of us do at any given moment.
The first episode deals with ICE.
Yes.
Right? And immigration.
Yes. Immigration.
And it's not what you think, actually.
Nope. No, it
takes
really,
a little twist.
It
which,
does.
Again, we don't want to spoil it, but...
No, and you know, that was... I've been really... I mean, one of the things I'm really proud of the show is that we are, like I said, we're tackling these cultural issues, but we're doing it with... a really thoughtful and creative sort of attack. You know what I mean? Like we're coming at it in a way that we're not coming in to beat anybody over the head with a cudgel and tell you that this is what you need to think and this is what you need to do. We're actually telling human stories and in a way that, you know, hopefully people can relate and understand the issues from a human perspective a little bit more on both sides.
Has your relationship, how do I say this? Because you've lived here for a while. Hmm. You're immersed. You kind of know what's going on in this place, right? Has it changed, like playing, again, this is a new role for you, so I don't know how long you've been doing this, but has it changed your idea of what LA is?
One of the things that I love about Los Angeles, and one of the things that I genuinely sort of get a kick out of the Southland, is that my impression of what it is never, ever solidly on 2 feet, because I don't think that this place is ever solidly on 2 feet in terms of what it thinks it is.
Does seem to change a lot, doesn't it?
It does, man, yeah. In a way that is fascinating and very specifically West Coast. There's a mentality and a freedom of expression out here that is unencumbered by a lot of stuff that you find in other places, Boston, New York, D.C., you know, those sort of Chicago, there's a way of walking through the world out here that I actually have come to really not only have a great deal of respect for, but really it's worked its way into my heart. And, you know, I say this as somebody who is, you know, I'm an East Coast guy and I love New York and always will.
You're a Texan.
Well, yeah. I mean, I grew up in Texas, but I was never a Texan, you know. I wasn't born there. That means I'm not a Texan.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I'm a theater rat. So, like, whenever I can go back to New York, I do. And, you know, that's always been my artistic home. But I genuinely have come to fall in love with this place because, specifically because of it, you can't ever lock it down. Any minute you think you got this thing locked down, you drive up to North Hollywood and the Arts District up there and you see something completely different, or you come down here, you know, I mean, out to Santa Monica or wherever it is, like the city and its neighborhoods are constantly changing and evolving and growing in a way that I love it.
Speaking of the cudgel that you get hit by, a lot of folks remember you as executive producer Don Kiefer from the fictional cable channel ACN on HBO's The Newsroom.
This is the very last polling data taken before the polls open tomorrow.
Who's going to win?
President will be reelected, but Tulsi Gabbard's going to win in Hawaii's second. She'll be the first Samoan in Congress. And Kerry Bentivoglio is going to take the seat vacated by Thaddeus McCotter, who came out with my pick for the best resignation statement of all time. The recent events, totalities of calumnies, indignities, and deceits have weighed most heavily upon my family. Thus, acutely aware one cannot rebuild their hearth among the ruins of their U.S. House office, for the sake of my loved ones, I must strike another match, go start anew by embracing the promotion back from public servant to sovereign citizen.
Oh. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Thanks,
just,
Thaddeus.
Just that, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Thaddeus.
The show survived for 3 years. It was seen as staunch criticism of the national news media, particularly cable news.
Mm-hmm.
People criticized it for being a little preachy.
Mm-hmm.
How's the media doing 6 years after The Newsroom ended?
Isn't that a question? You know, yeah. We took a lot of criticism from a lot of different fronts. All the things that we sort of laid down in that show saying, hey, we as a citizenry really need to start taking the Fourth Estate seriously, and because it is potentially the thing that stands between the healthy continuity of our republic and a massive upheaval that could put into peril what we know or understand our constitutional separation of powers to mean. And it sort of has played itself out. I would never sit here and say that anything, any piece of art that I've ever been involved in is above or not worthy of criticism. There is a purpose for it, and it's totally justified and worthwhile up until a certain point. And I think that time has only sort of proven that we were onto something before anybody knew that we were onto something. The Obama years during the Obama years, the media had some interesting sort of gears that were being ground in an uncomfortable way, I think. And they were justifiably a little bit annoyed by that. But I don't think that anybody really clocked how serious an issue it could become and how quickly it could get there. And that at any given moment, our republic and the health of it sits on a razor's edge.
Thanks for visiting the Fourth Estate, by the way.
I love it here.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, you guys, you know, you dress it up nice.
We hope we live up to the task,
yeah.
I think is what we say.
I think you guys do a great job. I mean, that's public radio, man.
Yeah, yeah. Thomas Sadowski, star of the new CBS drama Tommy, premieres tonight on CBS, locally here on KCBS in Los Angeles. Tommy, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Pop-up restaurants have been around for a minute or two, but lately, a new wave of chefs hailing from big cities, think New York or Chicago, is sweeping through Southern California. Prince Street Pizza, Honey Butter Fried Chicken, Katz's Deli, they've all made appearances in L.A. Mona Holmes is a reporter at Eater L.A., one of our regular contributors here at Greater L.A. Hey, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
We talk about pop-up restaurants and other big cities, New York and Chicago, but I wonder, L.A. has, like, fine restaurants in its own right. So why a pop-up here?
Well, you know, these temporary restaurants, I actually spoke to a couple of chefs about it. And the reason why a lot of these out-of-towners are coming here to do a pop-up are because it's a lot cheaper. I mean, it's incredibly expensive
cheaper
to run.
Cheaper in LA.
Cheaper in LA, believe it. I mean, it's incredibly expensive to run a restaurant in general, but when you compare space availability, it tends to be a lot easier to do in Los Angeles. And then the second reason is that people in Los Angeles love their pop-ups. I mean, they're kind of crazy about them, actually.
Really? Is it because we're more of a town where people are from somewhere else?
I think it's more that everyone here is completely game for trying something new. A restaurant owner, a chef can come in, set up very quickly and easily, completely just immerse whoever's there into trying something that might be an experiment or a new idea. And fortunately, you can do that with a pop-up a lot less expensively than opening up a full-on brick and mortar.
A full-on brick and mortar that's going to cost you. Obviously, the setup cost to get that up and running is going to be a lot of money.
Ooh,
prohibitively
yes,
expensive.
Yes, prohibitively.
I mentioned a few at the outset, Katz's Deli, Honey Butter Chicken, mm-hmm. New York City Superiority Burger. Are they all testing the market out? Is this like a, hey, let's put our toe in the water and see if, you know, if the water's warm?
Oh, they're all doing this very, very uniquely. Katz's set up right here in Santa Monica at Belcampo Meat Company. And what they did was they partnered with Uber Eats. They put together this take-home sandwich kit that was $27 with pastrami, rye, deli mustard, and then it came with a Belcampo burger, and that ran for 3 days. Chicago's Honey Butter Fried Chicken, they made an appearance at Pizzana, and it was only for one day.
One day?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everyone's doing it, has their own method. I mean, also, too, they got to get the people here. They got to figure out how to set it up. So they'd want to do, you know, getting in and out is pretty easy.
How do you get people on social media? How do you grab them to get them there for one day?
I would say that the bulk of the marketing goes through the social media of the existing restaurant that they're popping up in. It's a lot easier to do it that way with a built-in audience.
I mentioned Superiority, the mm-hmm. burger shop from New York. They've done several pop-ups in L.A. So mm-hmm. the deal is with them, we're going to do a pop-up. It's really good. We'll do mm-hmm. it again in a few months.
Well, they had a really unique way of doing it. They clearly wanted to test the market. They put together this no-vegetarian hamburger tour of L.A., where they popped up in different restaurants 4 days in a row. But also to one of the owners who used to live in Los Angeles and worked with Nancy Silverton at Camp Neely, said that he would like to eventually take one of those one-offs to something more permanent.
So they forego the risk, right, in trying to build a market.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, it's a different set of challenges because, you know, renting that equipment can add up. You need infrastructure like a dishwasher, make marketing your own demand in many cases, in most cases, truly. So you're doing a lot of it yourselves, and all of those little things absolutely can add up.
Is there a track record? Has somebody come in, done a pop-up restaurant, and then they successfully sort of crossed over into a brick and mortar, a permanent brick and mortar here in LA?
Well, there is one, and actually it's one of my favorite places. And just to be clear, the majority of the transplant pop-ups that came along have not made the successful leap to brick and mortar. But one in Culver City in the platform project is called Roberta's. And the chef and owner, Carlo Miracci, he started out doing pop-ups right on the same spot where his present restaurant is and successfully made that transition. And his place is fantastic. But the locals are still doing it. I mean, the best example is Court Cafe, which you guys covered last year. You know, the three partners started making food out of their own homes, in some cases on their front lawn, which are in true pop-up style.
These are the Instagram stars,
these
right?
are the absolute 100% Instagram stars, Instagram food stars of LA.
Yeah.
And so not only do they have the Court Cafe, but they also Taco Mel also has a location in Leimert Park.
What pop-ups can we look forward to?
Okay, one of my favorites is called Bolo, B-O-L-O. And that's actually happening this week, and these owners make these incredible fried chicken sandwiches with this hot buttered, slightly sweet Hong Kong style bread. And they're also usually at Smorgasburg, which truthfully in itself is another pop-up, just a gigantic one.
This is the one in the Arts District.
This is the one at Row.
Row.
And eventually, I spoke to the owners a year and a half ago, and they said that they were going to be eventually opening a restaurant, but that hasn't happened quite yet. And then the ultimate pop-up that I'd love for your listeners to know about is by Disco Dining Club. The founder is Courtney Nichols, and what she does is she creates and builds a restaurant out of scratch. and takes a theme and runs with it in a way that resembles Willy Wonka and Disneyland on psychedelics.
No way.
The next one is on February 14th and 15th. And she's also taken over restaurant spaces too, but this one should be pretty spectacular.
That's quite a pop-up.
Oh, you could say that.
Yeah. Let's go. Should we?
I'm down, Steve.
I'm down for something like that. Let's do it. All right. Mona Holmes, reporter at Eater LA, one of our regulars here at Greater LA. Now I'm hungry, Mona.
That's my goal, Steve. That's my goal.
Well, we hope you are satisfied with your lunch craving and had a good time with us today. That's going to do it for us today. Next week, some hopefuls who want to sell cannabis legally say the state of California is bogarting the licensing process by setting up a lot of bureaucracy and expense, making it a very expensive process. People who are struggling to sell pot the right and legal way. Next week on Greater LA. We are online at kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast there. Just click the button. We'd love to talk to you every single day and share your thoughts with us too at our website. Our producer is Jenna Cagle. Our editor is Sonia Geis. Amy Ta is part of our web team. Phil Richards and Ray Guarna mix and engineer the show. Christine Camito keeps us on time. Thank you, Christine. Christian Bordahl oversees the operation. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thankful, honored for your ears and your time today. Have yourself a great Thursday.